In the criminal justice system, the people are represented by two separate yet equally important groups, the police who investigate crime and the district attorneys who prosecute the offenders. These are their stories.
Big time three-team trade, blockbuster trade. Chris Paul is joining the Los Angeles Lakers.
Now, the fans in L.A., now that's a completely different story. There's people lining up for the parade already, Jay. Chris Paul changes the dynamic of your offense, lets Kobe move around a little bit more. But Laker fans out here are greedy because the management is swinging for the fences.
I didn't veto anything.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Episode 2 of Basketball Court, podcast where we relitigate great what-ifs of NBA history. I'm your host and the judge here in the court of basketball, Peter Andrews. Today we're excited to bring you two new NBA alternate timelines, and they'll be presented by our counselors. First up, noted Kevin Durant fanboy Sam Tidings.
Thank you. It's always great.
And a returning champion from last week's episode, Miles Johnson.
Yes, undefeated Miles Johnson.
I don't know how long that record is going to last, Mr. Johnson. But
I got to rock it until that one in the loss column comes up.
Yes, for all we know.
I know this isn't a video chat anymore, but I am wearing my silver medal from last week's episode.
As long as you don't go on a Warriors-esque streak, I think that would actually get when it's just one opponent, it becomes the Globetrotters and the Washington Generals. So try to avoid that, Sam.
Yeah, don't be the Maria Sharapova of this situation here.
Okay, let's talk about the Clippers. Let's go.
No, let's not. Anyway, so there, as you all know, if you listen to the first episode, there are pivotal moments in every sport that change the very landscape of that sport. That's David Tyree making the infamous helmet catch, Ray Allen sinking a corner three in Game 6 of the Finals, Bill Buckner letting that damn ball get through his legs in 1986. But what would have been if Eli Manning had gotten sacked before he threw the ball up to Tyree, and Tyree had just retired in disgrace? What if the Red Sox had held on to that 10th inning lead? Probably Bill Simmons never would have been born. And, of course, what if Ray Allen had missed that three-pointer? It's a pretty good question. And those what-ifs are so true in basketball, where every single bounce counts, every difference in inches defines sports immortality. So the three of us have come together to put together Basketball Court, where we talk about those sorts of things. And we're going to be litigating and debating famous moments where the NBA was at a crossroads, breaking down the ramifications of the original results via the use of alternate timelines. So it'll be up to Sam and Miles to get creative with their arguments, and it'll be up to me, your judge, to decide who came up with the better one. I decide at the end of the episode who had the most compelling argument via my authority as the only one here who is in law school at present. Just before we get started, you can follow the show on Twitter. That's at Basketball Court Pod, where we have information about every episode and lots of extra content. We've also got a Facebook page with the same name. You can subscribe to us on iTunes. Please leave us a review. It is helpful in getting people to listen to the show. I don't know how exactly. It just is. All right. I think that's all the house.
To cut in.
Yeah.
It's a B-Ball Court Pod, the Twitter.
B-Ball Court Pod. Sam, I'm not even doing a good job of plugging the show.
This will all be like in writing somewhere near where you're clicking on this too, I'm assuming.
That's right. We'll make it super easy for you to become devoted fans of the Basketball Court.
You don't even have to
Let's be honest, just click on the hyperlink part. If you're listening to this, you probably already follow us on Twitter or Facebook anyway. It's episode 2.
I don't know. So. I think this is when it starts. I think this is when our media empire begins to rise.
It's all about building the brand. So,
yes, All right, let's get into our second shot here at rewriting NBA history. Here's the setup.
Big time three-team trade, blockbuster trade. Chris Paul is joining the Los Angeles Lakers.
Now, the fans in L.A., now that's a completely different story. There's people lining up for the parade already, Jay. Chris Paul changes the dynamic of your offense, lets Kobe move around a little bit more. But Laker fans out here are greedy because the management is swinging for the fences.
I didn't veto anything.
So you could argue that the 2011 lockout was a direct response to Miami's ability to build a super team. The owners came down hard on the players that offseason, taking back a large percentage of the giant pie of money, making tweaks to the cap to make it harder for teams to keep their high-priced rosters together. Just after Thanksgiving, the lockout ended, meaning free agency would start December 5th, training camp December 9th, then the season Christmas Day. after free agency started, there were a flurry of moves, but none was bigger than the Lakers, Rockets, and Hornets agreeing to a three-team deal that would send Chris Paul to L.A. and Paul Gasol to Houston. Due to the fact that at the time the NBA owned the Hornets, Commissioner David Stern had final say on the package Chris Paul would be dealt for. After Cavaliers owner Dan Gilbert whined extensively in a letter about how L.A. was putting together a super team, Stern determined the Hornets weren't getting enough and vetoed the trade. And lo, 2 days later, Chris Paul was a Clipper. Lob City was born. The Lakers' plans for world domination were put on hold, more or less permanently. 5 years later, the Lakers are awful, the Clippers can't make it past second round, and the Hornets have Anthony Davis, and not much else. So it's time to get to the question. What if that original Chris Paul trade had gone through? To determine the winner, to determine who will go first, I have a coin here. It's got a Queen Elizabeth's head on one side and a funky dragon on the other side. Sam, you are our returning loser, so you get to call it, and I will make sure the coin flips. So call it in the air.
I'm going to call Funky Dragon.
It's Queen Elizabeth's head, so you have lost. And Miles, it is your decision whether to go first or second.
I'll defer.
All right. Sam, you've got 15 minutes on the clock. Let's hear your timeline.
I'm going to take the wind. All right, here is where my story starts. The original Chris Paul trade at the time, if you believe the very well-sourced NBA reporters of that era of 2011, Chris Paul goes to the Lakers, Paul Gasol goes to the Rockets, and the Hornets get Lamar Odom, Goran Dragic, Kevin Martin, and the Rockets' 2012 first-round pick via the Knicks. So, in my alternate timeline, the Lakers have this absence in the front court alongside Andrew Bynum, who they still don't completely trust, who Kobe doesn't really trust, even with his strong season the year prior. And Dwight Howard has pretty much been begging to get out of Orlando at this point. He has 2 years left on his contract, and so the Lakers follow this up by making the Godfather offer to Orlando, and they acquire Dwight Howard also before the season starts on Christmas Day. They give up Andrew Bynum and some filler to make the salaries match, and their first-round picks in 2013 and 2015, which, of course, are the deals that ended up going to Phoenix in the Steve Nash deal in reality the next July 4th. And despite having this super team, the Lakers do not end up winning the title in 2011-2012. They do make it to the conference finals and lose to the Oklahoma City Thunder. But here are some key takeaways from that little divergence. Between the Celtics, the Heat, and now the Lakers, it is a league officially of super teams. Dan Gilbert, in that letter that Peter mentioned before this, before I started my little ramble here, he actually said that the league was turning everyone else into the Washington Wizards, and he was setting up teams like the Lakers and Heat to be the Harlem Globetrotters. It's really a fantastic piece of writing, and it's only a shame it's not in Comic Sans.
Yeah, I was going to say, was it in Comic Sans? How did he miss out on that?
No, I think it was... I know. It really deviated from the Gilbert brand, unfortunately. So Dan Gilbert is just mad as heck at this point. That's a key takeaway. Another takeaway is that with Kevin Martin actually going from Houston to New Orleans in that deal, that means he is not on the Rockets the next offseason, which means that the Rockets don't have their key piece to trade to Oklahoma City to be a bench scorer or a sort of a two-guard to fill in for James Harden. So James Harden is not traded to Houston. They have Pau Gasol and Jeremy Lin and, I guess, Kyle Lowry for an offseason. And Houston does okay in the West, but not great. And then the Hornets are decent enough to at least compete for a playoff spot because they have guys like Odom and Dragic and Kevin Martin, who's a pretty good scorer, which means that they're good enough that they don't completely stink and they don't get Anthony Davis in the lottery.
Wait, do I get to object?
Yeah, absolutely. This is a legitimate court, so you can make as many objections as you want.
This is court, Miles.
Yeah, I'm objecting. I guess, honestly, it's more of a question. So, given what we know about Clay Bennett and the situation that led up to the James Harden trade, why would Houston not having Kevin Martin mean that the Thunder or and Sam Presti wouldn't have just found a trade elsewhere? Because the whole problem was they didn't want to pay the money that Harden was asking for. Not that like they needed this trade to go through with Morey in Houston.
I'd like to redirect or rebuttal or whatever the official court term is,
yeah,
Your Honor.
So in, you know, an objection is usually not like the counsel's talking to each other, so you can just answer his question. I don't care.
Okay.
Oh, so this is not an official court then.
Well, I'm you know, the thing about
I'm gonna put that in my notes for future episodes.
The thing is that judges generally can do what they want, and particularly in this kangaroo court I have constructed, I can do whatever I want. So go respond to his question.
So my response is twofold. First of all, I didn't say that they don't make a Harden trade, just that it's not to Houston. I mean, one of the other teams they were talking to were your beloved Washington Wizards in a deal that would be centered around Bradley Beal and another Washington first-round pick. That would certainly be on the table at that point.
So he does get traded, though?
He could. I mean, he just doesn't go to Houston in this scenario, which is important really for the balance of power of the rest of the league, because down the road, Houston doesn't have James Harden to sort of be like, hey, here's a superstar, free agents, come sign with us for, you know, guys like Dwight Howard, who would have been a free agent in a couple of years to, you know, want to come play with. And I'm not saying he doesn't necessarily get traded, because also in this timeline, that it is an era of super teams. And I think, you know, seeing the way that the Celtics and then the Lakers and the Heat all sort of built up in this timeline, it might have convinced Clay Bennett to shell out the extra $2 million a year or whatever it would have been, because really it was petty cash for a guy who owns an, you know, oil fracking company, to keep James Harden around and sort of figure out the tax implications later.
And I actually wanted to ask a question which is a little bit more basketball related. You say the Lakers don't win the title in 2011-12. So you've got your Lakers are Chris Paul, Dwight Howard, and I guess Change versus...
And Kobe Bryant.
And Kobe Bryant. I don't know. I kind of forgot about him.
A Hall of Fame-ish basketball player that fans of the podcast might have heard of.
He's fine. So you've got those three guys versus KD, Harden, Westbrook, and Ibaka. And so can you make the case to me that the Lakers don't win that?
I can make the case that Dwight Howard historically had problems when he was being guarded by one Kendrick Perkins in the post, who was a member of the Oklahoma City Thunder at the time. And also that the Thunder had sort of built up this team, oddly enough, that was meant to combat the Lakers when they had Bynum and Gasol, where they had the two bigs, which is part of the reason they made the Perkins trade in the first place. And that they did have a lot of big men options at the time to throw at other teams' taller offensive options. I mean, you saw it in the Western Conference Finals with the Spurs that year, when they finally did start playing Ibaka as sort of a roaming, just block everything that gets to the rim, and letting Perkins guard someone like Tim Duncan on the low block, that their defense completely changed around. And then only when they played a team that really was devoted to duck ball, small ball, whatever you want to call it, in the Heat, did the whole having Perkins on the roster thing really expose them. So I definitely think the Thunder were a good enough team to contain the Lakers, even with Chris Paul, Dwight Howard. And it's a team that really would have had to gut a lot of the rest of their roster just to make it work under the cap, too.
Okay, I buy that. So part of your thing is that the Steve Nash trade doesn't happen. What does happen to Steve Nash?
Well, if you do remember that memorable July 4th weekend of 2012.
I did not.
Originally, I do. It was a wonderful time. I was actually in your home state of Delaware during the whole Steve Nash insanity.
Okay, wait, what were you doing in Delaware for that time?
I was visiting my buddy who had a house at the University of Delaware, and we were raging it up, having a barbecue, looking at
friends with Joe Flacco.
Steve Nash tweets.
What, yeah. Is your friend elite?
Yes. My friend was elite at throwing July 4th parties.
Okay, so you're in Delaware, and you're watching this weekend happen. What happens in alternate 2012?
Well, in alternate 2012, I guess I have to stay in New Jersey because you guys are judging me for going down to Delaware over July 4th weekend.
Go as much as you want. It's the best state in the nation.
So anyway, if you do remember that weekend, before Steve Nash went to the Lakers, there was a real debate on whether or not he was going to get signed and traded to the Knicks or to the Raptors. And it looked like when the Raptors signed Landry Fields or matched him up with a restricted free agency offer that the Knicks were kind of screwed, and then it came out that no, the Knicks were going to put Shumpert in a deal to send it out, and the deal was good to go until the Lakers said, here's all of our draft picks that we'll surely not need in the future because we'll be so good. Let's have Steve Nash on the team. So the Lakers don't have those draft picks anymore, and they don't need a point guard because they have Chris Paul, of course. So Chris Paul ends up going to the Knicks. They give up Iman Shumpert and Tony Douglas and some other filler and not a draft pick, importantly. The Raptors miss out on Nash, and just like in real life, they end up acquiring Kyle Lowry to run the point for them. So some key takeaways from there is that the Knicks are actually kind of fun to watch for a little bit because they have Nash and Stoudemire back together once again, and Carmelo Anthony actually has a real point guard for the first time. And the Suns are kind of screwed because they don't have great future picks like they do in real life now because those Lakers picks that have gone awry. And another key thing from that 2012 offseason is a lot of it was centered around Dwight Howard getting traded and from Orlando to L.A. and Andre Iguodala going from the Sixers to Denver and Andrew Bynum going from L.A. to Philly and Philly sending Vucevic and some other players to Orlando. That lovely four-team trade that ended up sort of killing the Sixers 2012-2013 season when Bynum never played and ushering the Sam Hinkie era. Well, of course, in this timeline, Dwight's already been dealt, and Orlando certainly doesn't need Vucevic because they have Andrew Bynum. So the Sixers hold on to Vucevic, and they decide to build their team around him and Jrue Holiday because that's Vuce's first real breakout year, if you remember. And away we go. The Sixers are competent enough, but Iguodala is hitting free agency in the year, so they decide to trade him to Denver for some future draft picks and some filler.
So
that sort of leads the Sixers down this timeline of not tanking.
So a couple things here. So one thing podcast listeners might not know, I'm a Sixers fan. In your alternate timeline, Andrew Bynum never becomes the most reviled like non-athlete in Philadelphia sports. Because
he becomes the most reviled man in Orlando besides Daffy Duck.
Does the bowling injury still happen? But just like at a bowling alley in Orlando?
I think his leg gets eaten by an alligator.
I think that he was a very fragile person, so it might not have been bowling. It might have been like a really bad experience on Splash Mountain or something. But either way,
he does end up... What's the equivalent of bowling in Florida?
Shuffleboard.
I was going to say shuffleboard.
Okay.
It's a very... Orlando. And that's the thing you can hurt your knee doing. I've played shuffleboard. It's very strenuous on the lower body.
How many times have you played shuffleboard?
How many times have you hurt yourself playing shuffleboard?
The answer to both is three.
All right. So you're saying the Sixers are basically Jrue, Vuk, and they're going to try to like put some pieces. I guess they're not going to get rid of Evan Turner, you know, all this good stuff. Interesting line of thought there.
They're going to try to compete. Yeah.
I don't think that's a good
and
idea.
So let's jump ahead a year.
Yep.
Dwight still leaves LA after the 2012-2013 season because Kobe is just an unrelenting dick to him. And just like in real life, he's sort of a fragile personality who can't handle angry Kobe. So Dwight decides to leave, and he does end up going to Houston to team up with Pau and Jeremy Lin, who they had signed to the contract the year prior. Chris Paul sticks around in a 5-year max deal to play with Kobe and sort of take over the heir to the Lakers throne once Kobe leaves. And the team is actually good enough to make it to the second round, but they can't get back to the conference finals, which is part of the reason Dwight decides to leave in the first place. So what are the takeaways after that season? The Lakers are sort of bereft of future picks, so they kind of have to go after everything in free agency. So they sign Paul Millsap to be their front court option to a 3-year max deal, and of course he's dying to play with Chris Paul, so that works out well for them. The Sixers don't make the playoffs, so they fire their GM, but they do not hire Sam Hinkie because Sam Hinkie is not a super genius who traded for James Harden, because once again James Harden does not get traded to Houston in this timeline. They hire a more traditional GM. They do not go to super tank. They build around Jrue Holiday and Vooch. They trade up in the draft with New Orleans just like they did in real life. But this time they need a guard since they have their center in place, so they draft Ben McLemore instead of Nerlens Noel, who's going to miss the entire season.
Okay, I will just say two things, and then we'll move on to your next point. Firstly, I do think the Sixers would have hired an analytically minded GM, maybe not one as ruthless as the Dark Lord himself, Sam Hinkie. But I think the writing on the wall that season was very much that the ownership wanted to move in a more analytical direction after the Doug Collins, Ron Thorne era.
Yeah, I think that they definitely wanted to go in a different direction from the Collins era. And I think part of the reason that everyone sort of turned so sour on him was the way that everything was handled with respect to Bynum, mm-hmm. and that sort of derailing their whole season. So I could see them going, you know, at least when I wrote more traditional in my notes, it really just meant like, you know, a little bit less nutso than Hinkie's sort of been. And not that they were going to hire, you know, an old school Byron Scott
or
type guy.
A Jerry Colangelo, you might even say.
Yeah. That is an apt comparison, yeah.
And also, I don't like this bit where the Sixers don't get Nerlens because he's a really fun basketball player to watch.
He's really awesome, yeah.
But
it doesn't make sense in Sam world for them to trade up and get a center in a weak draft, especially one who's going to miss the season since they're intent on getting back to the playoffs.
All right, so now we're past 2013. Where does this leave the Lakers? And I'm also curious about, you know, in this counterfactual, you've destroyed a budding Clippers team. Where does that leave them?
Let's start with the Lakers, because this is the point where Kobe starts getting hurt, and you know, Chris Paul and Millsap and the rest of that roster, it's good enough to make the playoffs, but they're not a great team, especially with Kobe's huge cap number holding them back. But of course, the Lakers refuse to amnesty him. CP3 is kind of dragging this team along, because he can't leave the Lakers until the summer of 2017. Also important in this timeline, there are no State Farm commercials because Chris Paul is still really playing second fiddle, even third fiddle. You could even add his first year in LA behind Kobe and Dwight. So Chris Paul doesn't become the super incredible, marketable personality. And he really just wants to focus on basketball and not silly things like commercials, especially with Kobe breathing down his neck every day after practice. So there is no Cliff Paul in this timeline.
It's a great loss.
Which I think is an important thing. It's an important thing that I want the judge to know when he's making his final consideration. But let's talk about the Clippers, because Blake Griffin signs an extension, his rookie max in 2012, that could keep him in LA until 2018 with a 2017 opt-out. But of course, the Donald Sterling situation pops up in 2014, and Blake looks around and he's got this super racist owner who's being forced out. There's not really any talent around him on the Clippers besides DeAndre Jordan and Eric Bledsoe, who are sort of a hodgepodge team coming together. And so Griffin makes it known that he wants out after the season. Remember, this comes out during the first round of the playoffs which the Clippers do not make because they're not super great. The Clippers get sold for about half as much as they get sold in real life, and to someone who's really just in it for the money and not someone who's an unhinged crazy person who likes basketball like Steve Ballmer. So the first move for the new ownership is trading Blake Griffin to the Celtics, and part of the Lakers' haul back is Boston's 2014 first-round pick, which would be Marcus Smart, and of course Brooklyn's unprotected 2016 draft pick, which right now is looking pretty good, if you ask me.
Yes, I take it in this timeline the Nets are still a tire fire.
Yeah, I'm going to go on the hunch that Billy King still ruins the Nets in my alternate timeline.
I have to say, I think that's quite a leap. You're telling me that Billy King in every timeline is incompetent?
We should just do a whole episode somewhere down the line. Like, what if Billy King didn't ruin the Sixers and the Nets separately? It's like, what if they had someone competent in place?
I would listen to that. All right.
Sorry to Billy King if you're listening to this podcast, by the way. I apologize.
Yo, Billy King, if you're listening to this podcast, come on. You know, we'll let you talk about all this stuff.
He could totally be a guest judge. Yeah.
All right. So is that all for you, Mr. Tidings?
My closing argument is that this is an era defined by super teams and super failures. It's an era defined by two sort of wayward souls: Blake Griffin, Dwight Howard, Chris Paul not being in the State Farm commercials, and the Thunder winning at least two championships. Thank you.
You know, I was enjoying the rhetorical flourishes until you ended with the insane Thunder statement, which, you know, it's up to you whether you want to continue to pursue this line of argument, which has shown there's no sympathy in this court for the Thunder fanboyism. So
I was kind of hoping that opposing counsel will object and I could just let that be stricken from the record, but since that did not happen, I'm just going to roll with it.
Yeah, you know, sometimes you know, I am, like I said, I'm in law school and we did a mock trial thing last couple weeks, and one thing I learned is, like, sometimes you can object, but it's better to just not object and let Sam get in his own way. Yeah. Let the other side flop all over themselves. So, Miles showing some good lawyering here. All right, and speaking,
I would like to amend previous statement to one championship, not two.
All right, fair enough.
That's my case.
All right, let us switch to the other side. Mr. Johnson, you deferred, and so you get the ball to start the second half. 15 minutes on the clock for you. What happens when the Chris Paul trade goes through?
Okay, so like Sam, you start with the initial conditions that the Lakers get Chris Paul, the Rockets get Powell, the Hornets, I don't know if Sam mentioned this, but they also get Luis Scola in addition to Odom, Kevin Martin, Dragic in that first pick from New York. And really the basic point is that coming out of the lockout and coming off of some sort of conditions that Miami has created in terms of super teams, the Lakers are just really looking to make a splash. I think Mitch Kupchak is somebody who... I think Mitch Kupchak doesn't very often play the long con, and so picking up a star in Chris Paul is a lot more appealing than, say, rebuilding through the draft, even after the Lakers' sort of embarrassing exit against the Mavs the year before. And, of course, now they're without Phil Jackson. Trying to rebound. David Stern doesn't veto this trade. And I actually keep the trade details from the Dwight Howard move the same as well.
Iggy section of the trade still happens.
Yeah, all that stuff still happens.
You're saying that happens right after the lockout or not until the next summer, like it actually did?
The next year, like it actually did. Oh,
okay.
Everything that's the same from that trade, including the timing of it, is the same. But before that happens, I have the Lakers finishing second in the West, winning 50 games. They actually tie with the Spurs but lose the season series. And I have them bowing out to the Thunder in 6 games in the conference finals. I have the Hornets winning 29 games that year and missing the playoffs. And I have the Rockets making the playoffs but also bowing out in the first round because they have Powell but not much else. Nothing really to me warrant anything past the first round appearance. I guess in terms of takeaways for this part, the Hornets are really trying to just blow up everything, realizing they're not going to be able to put a championship team around Chris Paul. And shout out to the Rockets because they get a pretty good interior score. I think people, unlike today, this would have been, 2011, Powell, I think, is at this point still respected as one of the better inside scorers in basketball. So that's their deal. So the next summer, this is again still slightly before the Dwight Howard trade, but talking about the draft the next year, Lakers don't have a first rounder because of the Ramon Sessions Luke Walton trade that would have happened before. The Rockets' first rounder goes to New Orleans again because of the trade doesn't get vetoed. And they actually use it to select instead of Royce White, considering now they already have Powell. They don't really necessarily need to invest in a interior scorer. They use that pick on Tony Roden, famed Philadelphia point guard Tony Roden.
Rest in peace, Tony Roden.
Yeah, I mean, one of the greats up there with Meek Mill and Beanie Siegel. So that goes down. Lakers have a big three form, though, officially now. And this is, again, talking about once the Dwight trade goes through. So you have Chris Paul, Kobe, and Dwight. And I have Kobe still tearing his Achilles at the end of the season, and which, you know, makes him miss the playoffs of that year, but he also misses all of next season. The Lakers struggle in the playoffs, and they get upset against the Grizzlies in the first round. The Rockets, I have them winning 47 games and getting swept by the Spurs in the first round. Hornets missed the first round, or sorry, Hornets missed the playoffs, I should say. But Anthony Davis, who they would have gotten in the for the first pick in the draft, I still have them, despite the big pickups that they make with Dragic and Kevin Martin. They don't really put anything together. Still steal the Anthony Davis pick. And I guess the big point at this sort of juncture is that Mitch Kupchak ends up looking like a genius, because now with an injury to like the lifeblood of the franchise, you still have Chris Paul, and you still have Dwight Howard. And these two, and again, at this point, remember that that Mike D'Antoni is still employed for the Lakers. So it would have been a lot of Chris Paul, Dwight Howard, pick and rolls. And perhaps even more importantly, now that Kobe is hurt in the playoffs and for that whole next year, Dwight doesn't hate basketball because life isn't bleak and without meaning. You know, it's really, you know, it's pretty, I think, almost impossible to really pin down how important Chris Paul is to this team, specifically because he makes playing for the Los Angeles Lakers a slightly less hostile work environment. So Dwight, you know, has no reason to wake up every day in the morning with this sense of dread, and actually enjoys playing basketball, and it reflects itself on the court. So that's all Chris Paul's doing.
Hang on, let me ask a question here, because
this
is my job as a judge.
Yep.
I agree that Kobe's a dick. Isn't Chris Paul also kind of a dick?
So my whole thing is, I think Chris Paul's game is more suited to Dwight Howard. It's like just on the floor. So I think even in situations, like let's say that Chris Paul and Kobe Bryant are equal in like being a dick potentially, like they're equal in dick potential, but Kobe Bryant is going to be a lot harder on Dwight Howard because their games just don't mesh in the way that it would on the floor, which is why I think perhaps what's most important is that when Kobe goes down, it's right at the end of the season. The Lakers are still going to make the playoffs that year, and Paul and Dwight are going to have an opportunity to really sort of gel. And again, they're going to struggle and eventually get upset by the Grizzlies, but they're going to really be able to find each other. And so a situation that could have looked like Dwight and Kobe just really not fitting together and them really not agreeing on much of anything and really just floundering, instead looks like Chris Paul not really having to be a dick to his center. I mean, it really is a situation where, you know, everybody likes a winner.
I have 2 points that I'd like to make to opposing counsel.
Okay. Here we go.
Hang on. I want to issue a general order that no one is allowed in this courtroom to ever use the phrase dick potential ever again. Sam, go ahead.
Can first I petition of all, this to is, have that stricken from the record, or is that
no? I'm not.
I didn't object. I did not object to dick potential because I knew it would come back to hurt you.
And I'm also I'm the editor of this as well. I'm the producer.
That's
of this,
also not
I'm
very not, well.
I'm not going back and bleeping you out. Let's be clear. All right, Sam, what's your deal?
A point in support of opposing counsel is that while we're discussing the potential of somebody to be a dick, Kobe is much more of an angry teammates person, and Chris Paul is much more of a punch opposing players in the groin and flop and whine to the refs and that sort of. I mean, they're both equally disliked, but I can see why Chris Paul would be liked more by his teammates than Kobe would. especially to somebody like Dwight Howard.
Plus, he and Dwight both do really dorky, goofy commercials, and that's something that Kobe really has never done. All of his commercials are like super intimidating, and you know what I mean. It's just it's a different thing altogether.
Yeah,
I also would like opposing counsel to address whether or not there is a Cliff Paul series of commercials in this timeline.
Okay, so there is a series of Cliff Paul commercials again, because quite frankly, there's just more spotlight to go around. Like, yes, the Clippers are also in LA, but we're talking about a Lakers team that would have unquestionably been compared to other great Lakers teams. They would have been, you know, there would have been slipshod sort of comparisons to the Showtime Lakers. Somebody would have photoshopped Dwight's head onto George Mikan or something stupid. There would have just been a lot more opportunity for everyone to get a little bit of shine. And so I think that, coupled with the fact that, again, Kobe's going down, and that first round series against the Grizzlies, I think, is important for lots of reasons, but perhaps primarily because it really gave like fans and media a chance to see, oh, like this might be Chris Paul's team now. Kobe is definitely like in the twilight of his career at this point. It's questionable as to whether he can stay healthy, because I mean, an Achilles tear is a big deal for any player, but especially a player that's, again, on the back end of his career. So it really is starting to look much more like Chris Paul and Dwight running the show rather than them playing second and third fiddle to Kobe. So yeah, he still gets his State Farm commercials. Although, you know what? Let's make them nationwide commercials, though.
So he's replacing Dennis Haysbert.
This is a big twist. Big twist.
All right, Mr. Johnson, why don't you move into your... I'm very interested to hear about what actually happened to the Clippers in this whole thing.
Yeah, so the big... Like, the biggest thing to remember here, and the only really important thing from here, is that if David Stern doesn't veto the Chris Paul trade, we never find out what a horrible, unabashed racist that Donald Sterling is. And
objection, objection, objection.
Your objection is temporarily overruled. I want to hear where Miles is going.
Oh, boy.
Okay, sure. So here's the thing. The Clippers lose out in this scenario the most. Yes, they draft Blake in 2009, and he signs a deal that would keep him there ostensibly through, I guess, what is that, the 2017-2018 season?
Yeah.
But that's basically all that the Clippers have going for them. Because, one, there's never any super team put together, which means there's never any incentive for Doc Rivers to come over and be that coach-GM hybrid thing that he is. That also means, though, perhaps most importantly, that the Clippers like never become this like sexy basketball team that they are now. You know, they never become really appealing. You know, now they've got Blake and DeAndre and Chris Paul, and they are just as much, if not like way more star-studded than the Lakers would have been the last time that they won a title. You know, like Blake, DeAndre, Chris Paul is just a more exciting, I mean, it's Lob City, it's a more exciting three than Bynum, Kobe, and Powell, right? So they never become this like really fascinating team and really exciting team to watch, which also means that there's no reason for Magic Johnson to ever go to Clippers games. I mean, it doesn't make any sense for him to do that. They have the best pure point guard in the franchise since he played there, playing alongside the best center the franchise would have had since Shaq. There's just no reason for Magic Johnson to ever do anything but go to Lakers games, which means that there's no opportunity for Beast Diviano to be, who's the Instagram model, to be photographed with Magic Johnson, which of course means there's no sting operation for him to catch, or for her, excuse me, to catch Sterling in his living room or whatever, saying that, you know, he didn't want her to be photographed with black people at the games. It doesn't make any sense because Magic Johnson's not at the games. Nobody's at the games because nobody cares about the Clippers, which means that we never find out that he's a terrible person and has this long record of screwing poor black and brown people out of public housing and the different real estate sort of holdings that he would have owned. So that's the really the big thing. And I guess the asides to that are that New Orleans also kind of puts together this kind of scrappy, you know, Island of Misfit Toys kind of creation, and is okay. I mean, they're not great. Houston and L.A. are also just kind of mediocre. I do have the Harden trade still going through because I think that the Rockets had the assets. I think you could have moved a guy like Chandler Parsons and some picks, or Chandler Parsons and packaged him with a 3-and-D guy, another 3-and-D guy, and got in Harden, because I just don't have any faith that Clay Bennett isn't a huge cheapskate. I don't think that seeing all these super teams put together that he would have still been like, oh, okay, like let's go ahead and pay Harden the money that he needs. So I think Sam Presti does pull that trade off, which means I think that Hinkie, similarly, is involved in that. So I have a lot of continuity with the way that things ended up happening, with the way that sort of my timeline deviated. Mm-hmm. But basically just that I don't have very much faith in Dwight Howard and Chris Paul to put anything together such that they would be able to topple teams like certainly not the Warriors last year, certainly not the Spurs the 2 years before that. And again, like last episode that we recorded, the Mavs are just one of those teams in NBA history that nobody was going to get in their way. That was divine intervention. They were going to win that title for Dirk. And Houston, who at this point would have had Harden and Pau Gasol, sure, it's decent offensively, especially if you surround them with some utility guys, but Pau is not a bulwark on defense that he would need to be to compete in the Western Conference, and Harden is even worse. So they end up, everyone in this ends up pretty mediocre, except for Mike D'Antoni, who gets to keep his job. So shout out to him.
Congratulations, Mike D'Antoni.
All right, so that concludes the arguments for both Mr. Johnson and Mr.
But I don't get to make my objection. I feel like I'm being railroaded.
Okay, let's talk about it right now. What's your objection?
My objection is you can't say that we never would have found out that Donald Sterling was a racist for a couple reasons. One being, a lot of people already knew he was a racist, terrible person. He had that housing lawsuit in 2006, the Elgin Baylor lawsuit. He had the thing where he scheduled the Black History Month giveaway for March. We knew this guy wasn't super put together. I mean, and then, of course, you're just assuming that a super old racist guy in Los Angeles isn't going to slip up, whether it's to an Instagram model or anyone else.
But see, I think you're inadvertently helping Miles, because I think,
boy,
I do think that basically Miles's argument is that the reason the Sterling scandal took off was not because of the whole history of, like, obviously it's horrible. Donald Sterling is a terrible person. What he did, the housing lawsuit, the Elgin Baylor suit, all that stuff, his comments to Clippers players over the years, no question he was a disastrous owner, a terrible human being, and he will rot in hell. But he had been able to hang on to that team that whole time. And what happens is he gets forced out because it's the perfect storm of Adam Silver taking power, having an opportunity to flex his muscles, really setting a great tone for his commissionership, unlike any of the other professional sports commissioners today. It was that precipitating event, the frankness of Sterling's off-camera remarks that I think really led to him being pushed out. And so I think Miles actually has a really good argument on this point, which is that without Chris Paul, the Clippers continue to flounder in obscurity, and Sterling just continues to do the same.
And let me also just say that Magic Johnson is unique in this, in that, so like, if I get my picture taken with V. Stiviano, like, yeah, Donald Sterling's probably not pleased about it, but he's not like that mad. You know, it's the fact that guys like Matt Kemp, that Magic Johnson are there, that is what is seen to be threatening. Like, I'm sure he doesn't like any black guys taking pictures of, you know, themselves with his mistress and putting them on Instagram, but, you know, it couldn't be Magic Johnson. It couldn't be this, like, high profile. Like, there's so many reasons that it couldn't be Magic Johnson specifically.
Sam?
that I'm not going to like get into.
But I also think that, I mean, you're ignoring the fact, I mean, the Clippers were going to come up a little bit at least. They weren't going to be Lob City, everyone get excited Clippers, but I mean, Blake Griffin's turning into a superstar. They still had Eric Bledsoe, DeAndre Jordan. That was still going to be a playoff team. There were still going to be high-profile people attending their games. The team was going to garner attention whether or not Magic Johnson specifically was the person sitting in the seat that causes this whole ownership of the Sterlings to go awry.
I guess my point is, and this is something I think Peter was implying in his thing, is just that, like, yes, the Blake Griffin is one of the better power forwards in the league right now. But there's something different about the star power that would have been generated in Los Angeles because of Chris Paul, DeAndre Jordan, Blake Griffin, super team.
Without this team coming together that way, isn't what separates Blake in L.A. from DeMarcus Cousins?
Right, or like Minnesota. Like, you don't have, like, rappers and you know, famous people showing up. Like, Rihanna's not sitting courtside for a Jazz Timberwolves game, you know, but she would have gone to a Clippers game. You know what I mean? Like, so there's a certain level of star power that just wasn't going to be matched here. And the Boogie comparison is actually, like, a really good one, too. Maybe even more so than Minnesota.
All right, so I'm going to start wrapping up and reaching my decision here. As the judge here in basketball court, I want to thank both of you for, as always, putting just an insane amount of thought and effort into these arguments. Listeners will know that. So the practice we have here is I make them submit briefs to me, which is just like a summary of what they're going to argue, just like a real court. Last time they were 6 pages each, and I'm very proud to say that they managed to cut it down to 1.5 pages each without, I don't think, losing too much. Were you guys comfortable with that page limit?
Yeah, I like this one. It let for a little more off the cuff, a little more improv.
No, I'm just glad we got to use the phrase dick potential one last time.
Yes, never more. Never more. All right, I'm just going to go through and just talk about some things I liked in each of them. Starting with Sam, I liked your Dan Gilbert remarks that made me laugh. I do think that you address what happened to Steve Nash, which I think was good. And the concept of Nash on the Knicks is kind of funny to me. So I appreciated you going down the question of the ripple effect of like what this does to the Sixers in terms of Hinkie and like how they begin putting that team together. I don't 100% agree, but I'm glad that you tried to play that out. And the No State Farm commercials, I think, is a really, really clutch observation. On the Miles side, I think it's interesting. Miles, I think, keeps more things stable and then kind of tries to find the one thing that would change. It's kind of big. So keeping the Harden trade in there. I'm a little bit more with Miles that I think that Harden was getting moved one way or another, and so I think it's not unreasonable to think he would have ended up in Houston either way.
I didn't say he wouldn't get moved for sure. I just said with Houston giving up two of those key assets that it's harder for them to be the partner that Oklahoma City seeks out. Just want to reiterate that for the judge.
For the jury.
Yeah. The judge and jury and executioner.
That's right. Well, there's no executions. You get to be on the show next week even if I rule against you. I mean, you might need to find a new law firm, but no, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. and I appreciate the other thing I appreciate about Miles is giving the appropriate shout out to Mike D'Antoni, who I like as a coach. I'm glad as an assistant in Philly right now. I think the discussion of like how having CP3 as a partner influences the Lakers is interesting. And then, of course, you know, we did just have that interesting conversation about Donald Sterling. I think that's a really, really key point. I mean, I think in terms of reshaping the league, that one really sets a tone for a lot of reasons, one of which is the massive purchase price that Ballmer paid for the Clippers. Another of which is we don't get the horrible Clippers uniforms that they came up with this year, which admittedly is like, it's a fair price to pay for getting Donald Sterling out of the league, but boy, oh boy, those are some horrible uniforms. So that's that to me is like that's important. So anyway, I'm going to render a judgment here. I think that both sides are pretty evenly matched, so I'm going to go with the side that had what I consider to be the most interesting tangential implication of the Chris Paul trade. And so that means that for the second week in a row, I'm going to enter judgment in favor of Miles Johnson.
Oh, no!
This is a great podcast.
Congratulations again, Mr. Johnson.
Thank you. Sam, it was fun.
Sam, do you have anything to say?
This is going to be a baseball podcast next week. This is going to be a what's going on in spring training podcast. We're done with the basketball talk.
Well, you know, the great thing about court is that there's always another day in it. That's not true most of the time. There's a legal principle about there's a principle about only getting one bite at the apple. But in this case, there's a lot of apples, and so we can. Really...
I don't think you watched Steve Making a Murderer close enough to really say that.
Well, I actually didn't watch Making. You know, I spent all my time surrounded by like cases and the law and stuff, and like watching it on TV is like too. You know,
it's too much. I bet
I need it like directly from the source, from the case books. Anyway.
Well, I spent all my time surrounded by basketball, and look how that's worked out.
Maybe you need to take a step back. Maybe you need to rethink your strategy.
This actually ruined my evening. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Well, I was going to say you have a lot of evening left, but I keep forgetting you're 3 hours behind me, so your evening is basically over already. This has been another episode of Basketball Court. Oh, one thing I want to talk about earlier, so I was going to say here, you know, Basketball Court's sponsored by... someone, but we don't have a sponsor for Basketball Court, and I wanted to ask you guys, you know, I'm going to just blindly solicit on Twitter for sponsorships. If you're listening and you want to pay some money to have your name here, like, go for it. We'll definitely do it. Who should sponsor Basketball Court in an ideal world?
I'll defer Zuckerberg. To the two-time defending champion.
We got to hit up Mark Zuckerberg. We are three visionary artists who really just need a chance. And I think that Mark Zuckerberg needs to listen to the podcast and then help us create art to transform the world and help humankind.
I was going to say, I think Tidal is a good sponsor and a good place to house the podcast in the future, because I don't know if you guys know this about Tidal, but it guarantees the highest quality audio. It's very important to me.
It's also
very important that the artists receive their fair share of the money. And if there is money coming into the podcast, I would like us to receive a fair share of it. So it's going to be Tidal or maybe Quiznos. They also believe in quality.
I'm down for Tidal because anything that I can be tangentially related to Rihanna is always a plus. And I'm also down for Quiznos because they toast their subs. And I think that's another.
I'm always down for Quiznos.
Yeah, Quiznos is solid. That's a solid
option. Just the new tagline.
Do you guys know that there's just like one of the. So I live in the Bay Area, which is like fine. And I take that back. It's amazing. I love it. But one thing about the Bay Area, though, is there's like no good sandwiches out here. Like, you can't just like. You know how in New York you can walk around any corner and there's just like a deli? Or like anywhere in the Northeast. Here it's like, I don't know where to get a good sandwich. There's a lot of burritos, but like a burrito is not a sandwich.
But you should be eating tacos.
I would agree with that. A burrito is not a sandwich.
I mean, I could be eating tacos, but like, I don't want to. Anyway, the last thing I will say is we're going to be putting Basketball Court out on vinyl, so that way you can get the best audio quality of all.
Sweet!
If anyone knows how to put a file out on vinyl, please let me know.
The B-side of Basketball Court on vinyl includes me winning, so be sure to flip over that record.
Next time. All right, so that's going to do it for this episode of Basketball Court. We'll be back in the next week or two or three with episode 3. We'll be solving a problem to be determined. Like I said earlier on, you can follow us on Twitter at @BballCourtPod. You can follow us on Facebook. You can just search Basketball Court Podcast. On those sites, you can engage with us. We'll be putting out some extra content. I think we might be taking some fan input as to what the next question we talk about should be, or at least a future question. You should subscribe to us on iTunes, and then leave us a review that says, you know, this is a really great podcast, or, you know, you could say it's a bad podcast, but if you leave us 5 stars, it doesn't matter what your text says. You know, it's like
we're not going to read it.
Yeah. So no. I just look at the stars.
Yeah.
I think that's everything.
I'm also not convinced this is a great podcast. So just throwing that out there.
I have never met a man so salty about losing two fake court arguments over fake basketball.
I mean,
it's real to me.
He's following in the footsteps of Kevin Durant, who also is really not fond of the media.
All right, cut this off. I'm going to sleep. Cut this off. Cut this podcast off.
Sam Tidings, thank you very much.
Thank you. It's always great to be here on basketball court.
And Miles Johnson, two-time champion, thanks so much.
All right, see y'all later.
I'm Judge Peter Andrews, signing off. Court's adjourned.